Welcome to the Media Madness Podcast, where we stop the madness every week by analyzing the news and critiquing the media. I'm Alex Nitzberg, and today my guest is Dr. Sebastian Gorka. Dr. Gorka is an internationally recognized authority on national security, strategy, and counterterrorism, and he's the author of the book Defeating Jihad, The Winnable War. He's also the chairman of the Threat Knowledge Group, as well as the vice president and professor of strategy and irregular warfare at the Institute of World Politics in Washington, D.C. Thank you for joining me today on the show, Dr. Gorka. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I love the title of your show, Media Madness. That is very, very apt. Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. Well, at Accuracy and Media, we're focused on all the crazy spin that's going on in the media. So that's why I'm glad to have you on to talk about the terror threat, because we just marked the 15th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. But since the attack originally in 2001, the United States has experienced a multitude of smaller scale attacks. In 2012, we had the new September 11th attack in Benghazi. We've had the Boston bombing, the attack in San Bernardino. We've had the recent Orlando shooting. So, Dr. Gorka, what is your analysis of the current threat level for another terrorist attack, and what do you think the next president needs to do to protect America from another domestic terror attack?
Well, my wife and I actually published a report on exactly that question with regards to ISIS just 1 week before the San Bernardino shooting. And your listeners can check it out if they go to threatknowledge.org, threatknowledge.org, and download the report on the ISIS threat to America. We've basically crunched all the unclassified data on what the jihadists are doing here in the United States, and it is a very, very disturbing picture. Since the caliphate was redeclared, since ISIS declared the Islamic State 2 years ago from the Grand Mosque at Mosul, we have killed or arrested 110 ISIS jihadis on U.S. territory, the most recent one being just 3 weeks ago in Roanoke, Virginia. If you look at that number, which already is disturbing, this is just jihadis from one organization, and it's more than 100. But if you break them down, if you classify them into what they were doing when we intercepted them, it's even more disturbing. Half of them are what the FBI calls travelers. They're U.S. subjects who are leaving U.S. territory to fight jihad for ISIS in the Middle East. So they're leaving here, going to Syria or Iraq. Just less than 20% of them are middle management terrorists, talent spotters, recruiters, people who are facilitating the travel of these individuals to the Middle East. But the worst part of all is that more than a third, 37% of everybody we've captured or killed here in America is an individual who has sworn allegiance to Abu Bakr, the head of ISIS, but has decided that the best way to serve the new emperor of Islam, the best way to serve the caliphate, is to not go anywhere, but instead to kill Americans here in the United States. As a result of that very high percentage, we concluded our report that the likelihood of a mass casualty attack, as in France, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And we published that 1 week before San Bernardino. And as you just mentioned, since then we've had Orlando. So the war is real. The war is here. The threat is already in America. What is it going to take to defeat it? That's why I wrote my book, Defeating Jihad. It's going to take three things. The first one is right up your alley. We have to get political correctness out of the threat assessment. The federal government, the White House, and the media that enables it is spinning a narrative that isn't true. They're censoring what the jihadis are doing. If you look at the transcript of the Orlando massacre, you saw the Attorney General try to change reality by censoring the words of Omar Mateen to the 911 dispatcher. That has to end. No more political correctness in the threat assessment. Second, the face of this war has to be our Sunni allies in the region. So we must empower the Egyptians, the Jordanians, the Emiratis to close with the enemy and destroy them. But that's not going to happen under the current administration because these governments have been dissed by the Obama White House. And lastly, we have to take a leaf out of the Cold War. The Cold War was won without a shot being fired. How did we win? We took down the ideology of the enemy. We delegitimized communism. Exactly the same thing has to happen now. We have to have a giant counter-propaganda campaign to to take down the brand, what I call the brand of global jihadism. Those three things together, and we can defeat this enemy.
All right, and point number one about political correctness, I'd like to focus in on that for a little bit. It was one of the key points in your book that you focused in on in the book. And during comments after the Orlando shooting, President Obama said that it isn't for the sake of political correctness that he doesn't use the term radical Islam, but it's because he doesn't want to play into the terrorist hands by grouping all Muslims with jihadists and making it sound like America or the Western world is at war with Islam. But in your book, you said that, quote, since 2009, the doctrine of the American government has been that religion has nothing to do with the terrorist threat to the republic, and that Islam must not be seen to be connected to terrorism, end quote. So, what are the ramifications that this doctrine has on America's efforts to defeat terrorists?
It's enormous. It's huge. Imagine if President Truman, during the Cold War, had said that the enemy we're facing are not communists. Don't use the word communism. If we'd done the same during World War II, if it had been prohibited by the federal government to discuss the Nazi ideology of the Third Reich, it would have been much harder, if not impossible, to defeat the enemy. When your enemy is a totalitarian organization, which is jihadism, the jihadists are just like the communists or the fascists. They have an ideology that either you agree with them or they will kill you or enslave you. If you deny that reality for your own political reasons, then you are endangering our warfighters, you are endangering American citizens, and you will prolong the war. The analogy I give is, imagine if a man walks into a hospital clinic and he's got second stage lymphatic cancer, and a hospital administrator at the top of the organization had said, I don't like the word cancer, we're going to ban the use of the word, you are not allowed to talk about cancer. So the patient goes in, and the doctor says to him, because of the political correctness that's been imposed upon him, you've got the flu. Why don't you go home and hydrate? What's going to happen to that individual? They're going to die. So the political distortion of reality leads to a situation in which the threat is misdiagnosed, and it becomes practically impossible to defeat the enemy.
And one specific example of this that you discussed in the book is the censorship that's been taking place in the intelligence and military communities since 2011. So could you discuss that a little and say what exactly does that censorship entail and how has that been impacting our war efforts?
Right. So a group of organizations that say they represent American Muslims but don't in fact do so, led by CARE, the Council for American Islamic Relations, pressurized the Obama administration to the result that in 2011, the White House wrote an unclassified memo to the then chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the most senior military officer in America, and the then Attorney General. And this memo, which you can find online, said, this is an order from the White House, all counterterrorism training in the United States, whether it's for the armed services or for federal law enforcement, such as the FBI, must not mention the religion Islam, and words such as jihad must be excised from any future counterterrorism training. That's the reality. The efficacy of our counterterrorism measures has been politically undermined because there is a ideological viewpoint in which Islam must be disconnected from the threat. And as Maria Haaf, the deputy press spokeswoman for the State Department, said, this is the perfect example of the madness. On national television, she said, there will be no more terrorism, there will be no more 9/11s if we have jobs for jihadi. The administration wants us to believe that all these people are simply unemployed and uneducated, not in fact driven by an ideology in which they see themselves as holy warriors destroying the infidel and his civilization.
And to what extent, if any, Do you believe that the media are responsible for promoting political correctness and obscuring the link between fundamentalist Islamic doctrine and the terror attacks we've been experiencing?
By themselves, the administration could not have gotten away with this. This was made possible. This absurdity, this Monty Python-esque absurdity, was only made possible by the willful connivance of the left-wing media. Look at Orlando. Orlando is the best case study. So the Pulse nightclub attack is the greatest terrorist attack on U.S. territory since September the 11th. 49 Americans slaughtered in a nightclub by one man, Omar Mateen. After that attack, do you recall that for the next week and a half, 2 weeks, the mainstream media pushed a very specific narrative to support the government's analysis that terrorism has nothing to do with Islam? And the narrative was, Omar Mateen, who is married, is a crypto-homosexual. He has suppressed homosexual tendencies, of which he is ashamed. And he went to the Pulse nightclub to exact revenge on some unnamed Latin lover. That was the scuttlebutt. That was the rumor that was being pushed and pushed and pushed by the media because the administration didn't want to hear that yet another person in America has killed in the name of Islam. And it only was until the FBI finally said, after 2 weeks of investigation, there is zero, absolutely no evidence that Omar Mateen was an overt or a covert homosexual, or that he had any revenge motive for what he did. So the media is culpable for assisting, for being an accomplice in this complete distortion of reality that is endangering Americans right now as we speak.
Yeah, they're no longer acting as the fourth estate that they're supposed to be, the watchdog. So,
No, and it's not just about terrorism, it's about national security in general. Just this morning, I mean, it's mind-boggling. This morning, an organization has released the emails between Colin Powell and the Clinton campaign and Clinton's office about her use of a private server. And in it, Colin Powell, the former national security advisor and the former Secretary of State, says in the emails, you need to read them, he says, Hillary Clinton, what the phrase he uses, everything she touches, she ruins because of her hubris. I never sent classified information on my private AOL account. I use that for unclassified messages, and I only use my government server, my government address for classified information. That's what he said in the emails. What is the left-wing press quoting? His derogatory comments about Donald Trump. I mean, the real story is right there in his emails, but the left-wing media is not interested because they have to protect the establishment, they have to protect Hillary, they have to protect President Obama. This is how absolutely banana republic-esque we have become in terms of the culpability of the media.
One of my other questions, since we're talking about Hillary Clinton here, if Hillary Clinton is elected president in November and America's current foreign policy remains basically the same as it is now, what do you think the state of the terror threat will look like in 4 years?
I have to, for full disclosure, I'm not part of the Trump campaign, but I have met Mr. Trump. He called on me last year to advise him on some national security issues. but to be honest, even if I hadn't met him, a Hillary Clinton administration would be catastrophic for this nation. If you look at her disregard for national security with regards to Servergate, highest levels of classified information being cut and pasted off government servers onto private servers, if you look at the Clinton cash revelations that she approved the sale of 20% of U.S. uranium to Russia as her husband was getting $140 million through their foundation from the same Russian companies. We have a person who's who's completely beholden to the highest bidder and has no regard for the interests of the Republic. So I don't know if he's even going to make it to the end of the election campaign, given the latest health revelations. But I'm clear on one thing. She would be bad for America, her allies, and the interests of the nation on the long run.
And as far as President Obama, over the last 7 3/4 years of his administration, he has done things like he's released terrorists from Guantanamo Bay. He's importing refugee populations that could be tainted with terrorists, and he's trying to up the amount of refugees that we take in. He's shipped money to Iran. He's censored training materials, as we previously discussed on here, that you wrote about in your book. What do you think is motivating, what is Obama's motivation, or what is his worldview that causes him to think these things are a good idea when they're clearly harming our national security?
Yeah, let's avoid the conspiracy theories. Conspiracy theories are fun, but they're called theories for a reason because they're not facts. So, all these things about, he's a crypto Muslim and stuff like that, I disregard those. Let's look at the facts. This man has been completely blatant. He came here to say, I'm going to fundamentally transform America, which he has done. Look at what's happening in terms of benefits in this country, lack of growth, the complete gargantuan enlargement of the welfare state. Not only that, his very first apology tour around the world and his statement in which he said, I believe in American exceptionalism the same way the Greeks and the Brits believe in Greek and British exceptionalism, means one thing. This man is a product of left-wing Trumpsky-esque ideology, which sees America as the root of all problems in the modern world. His return of the bust of Churchill to the British government as soon as he came into office smacks so wholeheartedly of his stance as an anti-colonialist. And now he sees us, he sees America, as the negative colonial force in the world that has to be taken down a peg or two. And in the last 7.5 years, he has taken us down a peg or three. The article, I think it was in Forbes six, seven years ago, front cover article by Dinesh D'Souza, absolutely nailed it. Dinesh D'Souza said, President Obama is the world's first, is America's first post-American president. Absolutely. He is a man who wanted to be president, not because he believes in what America is, but because he wants to redefine what we are, because we are the problem.
All right. And a couple more questions. One of them is, in your book, your third point is that you want to wage a counter propaganda campaign. So could you elaborate on that a little? What message would the campaign broadcast, and what would be the goal of the campaign? Is it a campaign to convert jihadists to Western ideals, or is it a campaign to convert fundamentalist Muslims to a more liberal strain of Islam? What exactly would that entail?
Right, it's neither of those. It's our support for those Muslims who want to be our friends, who want to live in peace with us, and who do not wish to see the 7th century fundamental version of Islam continue to ascend. The reality is we're not at war with Islam. We are at war with a 7th century version of it that is, in fact, as deadly to Muslims as it is to us. In fact, the majority of victims in Iraq and Syria today are not Christians and Yazidis. They've been decimated, but the majority of the victims are fellow Muslims who disagree with groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So the counter-propaganda campaign would focus on the fact that the enemy says they are the world's only true Muslims. We have to destroy that. If they're the best Muslims in the world, why are they killing their fellow Sunnis? We have to help those Sunnis, some of them that are already doing it without our assistance, very brave men and women pushing back on the internet, in the media, against these people who have an atavistic 7th century version of Islam. And we have to degrade their message. We have to help those people, such as President Sisi of Egypt, King Abdullah of Jordan, who are actually interested in maintaining close relations with us, who see their own futures as linked to a more modern interpretation of their religion. It would be very much akin to what we did during the Cold War, when America, and especially the CIA, was very active in promoting ideas in Europe and elsewhere to undermine the message of Karl Marx and the Kremlin. It would be finally an attempt in which we create a world in which it is no longer attractive to become a jihadi, and the modern Muslim version of their culture, of their religion, is allowed to flourish, as opposed to the 7th century barbaric ISIS envisioned version.
All right, and in closing, do you believe that ISIS is the biggest threat currently facing the United States, or do you foresee any other groups or threats arising in the near future that the country should be aware of?
Thank you for that. I just wrote this week in the Military Review. You can check the article. It's on my website, thegorkabriefing.com. That's THEGORKA briefing.com, thegorkabriefing.com. An article that looks at how America will be attacked in the future. And I discuss ISIS, I discuss China, I discuss Russia. The world is on fire. Thanks to the lack of leadership of the last 7.5 years, we have emboldened our enemies, whether it's Russia, China, North Korea, whether it's Iran, or whether it's ISIS. So the world is a very dangerous place, much more dangerous than it was when President Obama took office. But none of those threats is an existential one in the way that ISIS is. So I'm afraid of two things. I'm afraid of ISIS not being understood and responded to effectively. And secondly, I think if the nation looks at itself in the mirror, the other truly horrific enemy we face is ourselves. If you look at the debt that both politicians of left and right have accumulated for this nation and for generations to come, they're acting. Capitol Hill is acting like a bunch of drunken sailors that will create a bankrupt nation if we don't get a grip. So it's the global jihadi movement, number one. And secondly, it's us and our irresponsible politicians.
All right, Dr. Gorka, well, thank you for joining me on the show. I was glad to have you on the show today.
Thank you. The pleasure is mine. I enjoyed it.
All right, and thank you all for listening to the Media Madness podcast, where we stop the madness every week by analyzing the news and critiquing the media. Visit us at aim.org to see more of our articles and podcasts, and join us next week. Thank you.